gambling podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Sign up using our link and receive a $500 risk-free bet. That's right, $500. And if you send in your first bet slip, you're going to get a free t-shirt courtesy of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. So head on over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win for a $500 risk-free bet. That's right, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNN. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for avid sports bettors providing insight, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. We're also brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. The best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. That's right, no VIG betting that's legal in up to 40 states. Sign up at betteredge.com, promo code SGP, for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREDGE.com, promo code SGP. And finally, we're brought to you by Ace Per Head. Ace is the leader in pay-per-head providers, and they make it super easy to start your own sportsbook. Plus, Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free over at aceperhead.com/SGP. That's aceperhead.com/SGP.
Hello, 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 and welcome, all my little degenerate friends. Welcome to episode 11 of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the MMA, not quite the MMA Gambling Podcast Network, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We haven't quite taken over yet, but once again, the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us once again, and thank you for everyone who has listened up to this point. Looking at the data, we're one of the most popular podcast on the site already, so I thank everyone for that. My name is Jeff Fox. I am your host every week, and the reason you tune in for sure. I write about the sport and do some editing over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. I'm also editor-in-chief and the head, whatever you want to say, head guy, head dude, head cheese, head over honcho. At head honcho over at mma-manifesto.com. The voice you just heard is my co-host. Usually at this point in the podcast, I crap all over him for his horrible MMA picks. And this week is no different because he's still horrible at picking fights. And that would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland, host of the Top Turtle MMA podcast and host of Prelim Picker. Hiya, Dan.
Hey, and I will say, you know, I fancy myself the prelim expert. I did hit over 50% of the prelims correct. I just then followed that up quickly by missing literally every single card or fight on the main card.
Yeah, well, we both tend to do good on the prelims, and then things tend to fall apart on the main portion of the card. We of course are talking about UFC Fight Night Holloway versus Cater, or UFC on ABC Holloway versus Cater, or UFC Fight Island 7, or it's been called lots of things. But yes, which went down last Saturday from the magical, mythical UFC Fight Island, which is really Yaz Island in Abu Dhabi, UAE. Quite a night of fights, despite us doing fairly poorly with our picks. Dan, we'll start with him. He went 3-7. Which is just horrendous, even for him. That's very bad. And he's down to start the year off. He's down at like 57% of his investment, of the money he put in. He bet he got a minus 57% return on it. I didn't do too much better, considering I didn't pick any real underdogs. I wasn't bound to make a whole bunch of money if I missed on some picks. I was 5-5, down 24%. So much better than Dan. We had all the same picks up until the last two fights, which I was waffling on, but luckily I decided to stick with my original picks for those two fights, and that made the difference between me being 3-7 and me being 5-5. So the last two fights saved me a bit. Before we break it all down, I want to tell you about one of our new sponsors, which we just got, a WinBet. They just started up with us a few weeks ago. They have a $500 risk-free bet, and us at Sports Gambling Podcast, we're going to give away free T-shirts to everyone who, if you send in your first WinBet screenshot, email it to podcast@sportsgamblingpodcast.com, and you get yourself a free T-shirt. As for WinBet, they have tons of boosted bets, including a wheel spin to boost parlays. It's perfect for all you hashtag degens only. WinBet is currently online in New Jersey, Colorado, Michigan, and is coming soon to more states, and hopefully your state, on the way. If WinBet isn't active in your state, you can still get a free T-shirt just by referring a friend. So make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/win, and win is spelled W-Y-N-N. All right. I guess the reports of Max Holloway's demise are premature after watching his performance on Saturday night, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and man, it's crazy because, you know, I said on the podcast last week that I thought that the reason why we could talk about him possibly not being able to deal with a boxer like Calvin Kattar is that Calvin Kattar is the type of person who would engage him in a fight and let him land his punches because he was going to land more. We knew it. Max Holloway was going to land a ton of punches no matter what. I just thought Calvin Kattar would, in doing so, in letting himself be hit, and I don't mean letting himself be hit, but in getting hit and in accepting the damage, would be able to dish out more. But the craziest part of Max Holloway's performance, and the piece I don't think enough people are talking about, is the defense. Like, his evasiveness in that fight was next level, and something I don't think we've seen in any of his recent fights. Even the fight with Frankie Edgar, where he won, like, Frankie Edgar was hitting him more often, and he was, I don't know if just, like, trying to evade less, or if he just, like, leveled up his head movement in a wild way for this fight. Because, I mean, like, at one point in time, he was throwing punches, evading punches, and talking to Daniel Cormier all at the same time. Which is, I mean, like, that's an insane level of, like, awareness of where those punches are coming from. I don't think we've seen anything like that. And obviously, you know, Dana feels the same way, saying that, you know, he thinks a title shot has got to be next for him. It's not often that you lose two in a row to the same guy, and then people are instantly demanding for a third one. But even I am ready for their third fight now.
Right. Before we... I respond to all that. Who was the guy he was talking to at ringside again?
Oh, cage side? Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, oh, that's what I thought. You said Cormier. Okay. Anyhow, yeah, he's still
not Canadian. You can say it like an American.
he still did get hit his trademark 100+ times in the fight, but yeah, he just looked incredible. Like a whole new fighter, basically. The way he was. It was just unreal the way he was lighting up Kattar. The best thing you say about Calvin Kattar is he was tough. He survived all five rounds, but not much else to really take out of it for him in terms of positives. Holloway broke the record for most strikes in a fight. He landed 447. He also broke the record for most strikes by two fighters in a fight, I believe. So like his 447 strikes landed were more than any two fighters combined in a fight landed, which is insane. And he won 50-42, 50-43, 50-43, which is one of the most lopsided scores in UFC history. I believe they said it's the most lopsided score since Rich Franklin and David Lozo, which was decades ago. So it's quite the performance, quite the bounce back.
And I'm gonna be honest with you, I didn't agree with any of the judges' scorecards. I had it 50-41, with the exception of the first round. I gave him every one 10-8, which would have landed him at 50-41. I'm not sure you could pick two, never mind the fact that some judges thought you could pick three rounds that were only 10-9, because I don't know where in there Kattar did enough to not make any of those last four rounds 10-8.
Right, and let's check your math also. You said 10-8 for every round, and that would make it 41, is that right?
10-8 for every round except for the first.
Okay.
I gave the first 10-9.
Right, right,
right. I gave the first 10-9 and then the rest 10-8.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So, yeah, you can't really argue with that. This was as lopsided as they go. But that's not to say it wasn't fun. It was fight of the night, and it was an incredibly exciting fight to watch, basically just due to Max Holloway's artistry in the cage there.
For sure, yeah. I definitely would have given it Fight of the Night, but I hear, like, premature talks, like, this is definitely going to be there at the end of the year for Fight of the Year. I think after you see some other wars, you're going to realize, oh, that one was really one-sided, and while it was fun to see Cater continue to try to push forward, I mean, like, this is a beatdown. It was definitely the most exciting fight on this card, but I don't think you're going to see it still around at the end of the year for Fight of the Year.
Yeah, no, those are more two-sided battles when you get a Fight of the Year than that. This was definitely not that at all. Co-main event was also a very exciting fight, and that was a more two-way battle, between two old grizzled guys, Carlos Condit, who I ended up sticking with, and thankfully I did because I won that pick, and Dan had Matt Brown. That was both guys left that fight looking quite well. Brown's face didn't look quite well, but both guys put on a very good performance for guys supposedly with one foot out of the sport.
Yeah, and I'm impressed the most with Carlos Condit's ability to grapple, because I think for a while we've talked about him being the guy who, if somebody else initiates the grappling, he's out of there, right? Like, that's long been the path to victory over Carlos Condit. People were chastising Court McGee for not trying to shoot at least one takedown against him and winding up losing a decision on the feet. I think he showed here that even if he is going to concede some takedowns, he had some good sweeps, he had some good reversals, he actually sprawled on a couple of them that were decent, or at least used the cage a little bit to avoid a takedown or two from Matt Brown, which is a big improvement for him and kind of shocking to see at his current age. I will also, just before we close the door on this fight, say the judges fucked up on these scorecards too, because there is no way Matt Brown didn't win that first round. So for all of the judges' scorecards to say 30-27 is insane. It was definitely 29-28 across the board. I gave, you know, the right guy didn't get robbed of this fight, but I have a tough time watching that first round and wondering how the hell you score it for Condit.
Yeah, it's maybe because Brown split himself open, perhaps. But yeah, it wasn't Condit that split him open. He got cut on the takedown. Isn't that correct?
I think so. There was all kinds of clashes. And I mean, like, look, the dude's 40 years old and his face is pretty much entirely made of scar tissue at this point. You can look at him the wrong way and he starts bleeding. So, like, if you're judging a round based on the fact that he's bleeding, he ain't ever going to win a round.
Right. When you go to MMA decisions, the majority of media had it 29-28. But looks like three people had it 30-27, which I don't agree with either, but the vast majority had it 29-28. So, Condit, that's two straight wins for him. He's almost 37. You think he has any kind of future as other than a fan favorite, exciting fighter to watch, or does he have any top of the division life left in him, you think?
I don't think so. So, like, he right now is reversing, sweeping, out grappling Matt Brown, 40-year-old Matt Brown. You got to remember that 170-pound division is filled with better wrestlers than Matt Brown, right? Like, we're about to talk about Li Jingliang, who won by violent knockout. Not only would he probably, you know, take it to Carlos Condit on the feet, but he also has that wrestling in his back pocket where he would just smother Carlos Condit. And that's a guy who, I mean, depending on how the rankings come out with him having beaten Ponzinibbio, was unranked. So, you know, like, I don't see him as that. What I would like to see is a couple more of those, like, legend legacy fights for him. Like, who wouldn't like to see him run it back with Robbie Lawler right now, right? Like, that Robbie Lawler fight was 5 years ago now for the title. Obviously, neither of them have looked good since then, both on, like, massive losing streaks. You know, I think they're both, like, 2-5 since then. But, like, that's the perfect kind of fight for Condit now. Give him some ones that are exciting to watch, maybe rematches of old fights and stuff like that. I think he's got enough left in the tank to get a couple of more nice paydays and against guys who are fun to watch him fight. But, yeah, I think this division is too loaded with talented wrestlers for him to make any real noise.
Yeah, totally agree. Now, you mentioned the next fight on the card before the Condit one was – The Leech, Li Jingliang, violently knocking out Santiago Ponza Nibio, which is a fight we both, one of the many fights we both whiffed on last night. A very, very impressive performance for the Leech.
Yeah, and he's actually, it's crazy to think about. Like, he actually was the largest underdog on the card, which I think we said last week, seeing Ponza Nibio at that number was scary because he had been away for 2 years. So, like, we picked him, but, we weren't advising, like, you drop your entire bank account on him because those numbers suck. But it was interesting to see the way Jingliang did it, too, because I thought for sure if this was going to be his fight, it was going to be pressed up against the cage. It was going to be wear out Ponza Nibio. It would be at least mix up enough takedowns in there so that Ponza Nibio is guessing, even if you're not scoring them, even enough so he's guessing. And we got none of that, right? Like, we got just him standing and training with Ponza Nibio and, I mean, ultimately winning it. Like, he tagged him with a damn good one. I'm not sure he even needed the shot once it got to the ground, but he landed it pretty damn flush anyway. So props to him. And he's actually on a nice little run. I was looking. He's won 4 out of 5 with only a loss in there to Neil Magny, who's main eventing the card we'll be talking about later today. So, yeah, like, hell of a run for him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He is and before that, he lost Jake Matthews, and he had, four straight wins before that, too. So he's been 4 wins, then a loss, 3 wins, then a loss, and now he's got another win. So, yeah, he's putting together quite a decent resume, kind of under the radar resume. Joaquin Buckley got a little taste for his own medicine, got his head kicked off by Alessio Chirico, another fight we got wrong. We weren't fans of the number. we'll take that small victory, but we both thought Buckley was going to get the job done. He got his lights put out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I would say this too, like that one bothers me a little bit less than some of the other ones that I botched bad, because I don't think my read was all that bad in that fight either. Like, I think, you know, getting tagged with a head kick that just barely inched over the top of his guard and nicked the top of his head in that weird way that, like, those top of the head kicks seem to just completely put people out or disorient them. Like, you know, he's a shorter guy against a taller guy, so obviously that could have played into it. We could have talked a little bit more about that. I actually think you did bring that up now that I think about it. But, you know, I think if that fight goes longer, Buckley still proves to be the superior striker. If you told me they were going to rematch in 3 months, I'm not sure I wouldn't pick Buckley in the rematch. You know, like, good for DiCirico. He definitely saved his UFC career coming off of 3 losses to pick out a big knockout win. And I'm pretty sure he got one of the performance bonuses, too. So, yeah, like, props to him. But, like, yeah, I'm okay with missing that one on, you know, the way that people miss picking MMA fights is that sometimes it's not always the better guy who won. It's the guy who lands the big blow.
Yeah, exactly. And Buckley is, that's his third knockout loss of his career, so he's, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And for a guy who likes to stand and trade, he may not have the chin for it, especially not at this point. Only other real notable thing, we got the Soriano wrong. He knocked out Dusko Todorovic. He looked fairly good at doing that too. He was dominating that fight, knocked the mouth guard flying. Another lost mouth guard. somehow we've got that twice since we started doing the podcast. Mouth guards falling down the crevices of the octagon.
At least they didn't have to search for this one underneath the octagon. I appreciate right. that they had a backup that was on its way in, and then they found it wedged in there. But I can't even remember whose mouth guard it was at this point. But, like, when they're underneath with, like, a little baby keychain flashlight, like, searching yes. for a mouth guard, it's, like, the most pathetic thing to see, like, a company that just cost somebody billions of dollars to buy to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and this was the day, this was their debut on ABC, and this was the very first fight also. So, yeah, I believe it was Herb Dean was the ref, and he was pretty much adamant that they better get another mouth guard pronto. So luckily they did that. And then another one, I think the last fight worth mentioning is we really whiffed on Joseline Edwards' debut. She looked great against Wu Yanan. Swept her on two judges' cards and won 29-28 on the other. And she was just by far the better fighter in that fight. No fluke at all there.
No, I think what's interesting about that one, though, is it seemed to me – You know, again, I said I like Mu Yanan because of her output and the fact that she was probably a little bit better of a wrestler. I still think skill-wise that's probably true, but I think what we found out today about Mu Yanan is that she is not big or strong enough to fight at bantamweight. And right. I think that that's very clear because she had fought almost her entire UFC career at flyweight, right? Like, she fought Lauren Muller and she fought Mizuki Inoue at flyweight. And she, I think, if I'm not mistaken, she missed weight for at least one of those fights. So
I believe so.
Yeah. So, like, I think she was killing herself to try to get down to flyweight for that reason. She's not strong enough to beat bantamweights, and she's not strong enough to look good against bantamweights. And so now that she's back at bantamweight, I think the future for her is pretty bleak. With that being said, you gotta love Jocelyn Edwards' subs off her back, her sweeps. I mean, even her striking looked a little bit sharper than I had seen on the film. So I'm glad we got to see the real version of what she looks like against somebody who's, you know, skilled enough to be in the UFC. And I'll be interested to see what happens when she fights somebody a little bit bigger and stronger.
Right. Yeah, but nonetheless, a very impressive debut for her. Couple other notes before we move on to the rest of the to the next event in this very busy week. There were fans in the stands at Editat Arena, which was quite noticeable because it was quite strange hearing people cheering. It's been so long, but there were very very loud crowd for the small amount of people in such a large venue. And kind of buried the lead here. The ultimate, one of the greatest carnies of all time, Dana White pulled one of his best grifts ever, promising a huge announcement about Khabib Nurmagomedov's future, and then basically on the ABC telecast saying that basically his stance hasn't changed. He's still retired. He said maybe if something exciting, quote unquote, or spectacular happens at the pay-per-view, shockingly the pay-per-view that he wants everyone to buy, if something spectacular happens at the pay-per-view coming up next week, and then Khabib might come back. So that was the, like I said, the one of the ultimate carny moves. That was like even Ms. McMahon would blush at that.
Yeah, the comparison I made was it was like if LeBron had done that decision all the way back when he signed with the Heat, and then he came out, sat in his chair, and rather than saying I'm taking my talents to South Beach, said, you know, I'm still waiting for some people to send some contracts, and I'm pretty sure a good one's gonna come in and I'll sign it. Like it was literally like, oh, there's no status update. I'm just letting you know that, you know, like, maybe something might happen one day.
Yeah, I guess you can say the best thing you say is he made lemonade out of lemons, because I don't know if this was him over, him hoping that he would be able to sweet talk Khabib into coming back, and he jumped the gun and announced that he was gonna have this big exciting announcement or what the deal was. But yeah, he didn't look too good coming out of that, and that he doesn't have to try too hard not to look too good, because
you know,
Dana White has a habit of doing that.
You know what I also found pretty interesting though is he did mention in there And this was the most bogus point of it all. It's like he was like, if somebody this weekend does something pretty fun, like maybe Khabib will come back. So now all he needs, right, is just some person to have a spectacular knockout. Now, of course, if two people put on kind of duds of decisions or close decisions, Dana is going to be left like, oh, then Habib's not coming back, right? Like he loses his grift. So then he also threw in like, oh, and Khabib also likes Charles Oliveira. Like, he just casually dropped that in, like, hey, just in case my pay-per-view this upcoming weekend is a dud, I still want to be able to dangle Khabib in front of your face for another 6 months and tease it. So,
yeah, exactly.
And of course, my favorite part of it all, too, perhaps was him saying, Khabib doesn't want to hold up the division, but maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Khabib doesn't want to hold up the division, but I will, because I'm angry that Conor McGregor released some personal attacks between us, and I don't like someone having control over me. So last thing on Khabib, do you see him coming back? Like, I don't see him wanting to fight, get back into the Conor McGregor circus again. Maybe does he fight Dustin Poirier again? Like, I don't see how that would be exciting for him. And I don't know, Michael Chandler, Dan Hooker, are they big enough names? Not at this point. So I really, like, GSP, George St. Pierre, was the only fight that really made sense, and Dana seems to have no interest in doing that at all. I'm assuming GSP is asking for too much money, or there's something along those lines that he's I think he may still be his feelings might still be hurt from GSP coming back and winning the middleweight title and then disappearing again back to Quebec.
Yeah, I don't think GSP wants to come back. I think that's the most important part of that piece. And as far as this weekend coming up, the only of those four people fighting, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way to anybody else, but of those four people fighting, I think the only one that could excite Khabib enough for a comeback is oddly enough, I think Michael Chandler. Because you look at Connor, like, he beat Connor, and he beat Connor handedly. You know, Poirier, a little less handedly than Connor, but still, you know, he submitted Poirier in much the same way. Then we get Dan Hooker, who's lost to plenty of the top guys at lightweight. So, like, I don't think even a dominant performance for him against a UFC newcomer does anything for him as far as the Khabib sweepstakes. But Michael Chandler is a champ from another organization coming to the UFC to prove himself for the first time. If he were to go out and knock out a top five opponent like Dan Hooker in violent fashion quickly, there'd probably be some hype around it. There'd be talk about, like, oh, the old Bellator champ versus the UFC champ. Like, he might be able to do enough for his own stock that would warrant that. But I think that's probably it. It's almost too much of a shame that Charles Oliveira isn't in one of these fights, because I actually think he would be, as far as wanting Khabib to come back and trying to convince Khabib to come back, I think right now Charles Oliveira is the most intriguing name, being that he's looked so damn good. He's on a big, long win streak, which I'm sure Khabib appreciates, being, you know, on such a long one of himself. He showed he had good wrestling. He just beat Gaethje. Like, he's got all the tools and stuff to do so. So, yeah, like, I think that's probably the right answer, but I don't know necessarily that there is a right answer.
Yeah, no. It is kind of sleazy trying to, even for Dana White, trying to talk a guy who says he retires to honor his father who just passed away, and he's trying his hardest to pressure him to come back. But that's the Dana White way for you. But I do agree on the Chandler thing. He's still, even after next weekend, he still will be a little bit of an unknown commodity, a little mysterious, which is of interest. He has the, like you said, the Bellator credentials, plus he's an American wrestler too, which would be could be interesting for Khabib, testing out his wrestling skills against Chandler. So enough of all that hypothetical stuff. We're in the midst of three fight cards in the matter of a week after having 3 weeks off. So we should hop to that and preview the upcoming special Wednesday edition of the UFC. But before that, let me tell you about another one of our sponsors, which I'm active on. It's BetterThan.Vegas. If you haven't heard of it yet, BetterThan.Vegas, it's like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which would be sports betting, of course. Best part is you'll be able to get free picks from all of the crew over here at Sports Gambling Podcast Network, including myself. So make sure you subscribe to Sports Gambling Podcast Network page, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, and you won't miss any of their videos. And if you're subscribed, you get a notification sent to you every time that one of us posts a video. Hopefully you didn't follow my advice for last weekend's picks, because I had Wu Yanan, and I told you to jump all over that, and that didn't quite work out. And the other one I had was a fight that fell through. So you made no money off of me. But this week I'll do better, I promise. So just make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV to subscribe to our BetterThan.Vegas page today. So that's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. So like I said, this is a UFC had 3 weeks off, and now for some reason they're doing three fights in a week. We had last Saturday's, we have a Wednesday card, and then we have next Saturday's big pay-per-view, Conor McGregor's return. So on Wednesday, I can't remember the last Wednesday card they've had. It has been a while. This one had a main event change, which is happening often in these COVID times. It was supposed to be Leon Edwards versus Chimaev. Why am I blanking on his name?
Khamzat
Chimaev. I always get him and Rustam Khabilov mixed up for some reason. But yes, this is a fight who's what they've been scheduled three times before.
And they're booked again, too.
And they're booked again coming up in what, March, I believe. So yeah, it's anyhow, that one fell through. So now we still have a decent main event. It's going to be a welterweight main event. I believe it's still five rounds. Is that right? As far as you know, Dan?
I believe so.
Yeah, as Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. Like I said, this is a Wednesday card, and it's Wednesday afternoon also, which may not work for some of you. I guess with all of us working from home, we can keep one eye on the fights while we're working, right? Prelims are kicking off at 9 in the morning, so bright and early Wednesday morning, and then the main card is kicking off at noon. So they're basically setting their fights up to work with, since they're going to have an audience, actually, about 2,000 people in the 4,000 seat Etihad Arena. They're setting up their at least this card for to work on their time. They're about, what, 4 hours ahead. Actually, they are about, 9 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. So let's get started. Enough rambling by me. Let's get started. Let's let Dan make some bad picks here on the night, because we know he will. He hasn't disappointed yet with the bad picks. Right, Dan? You always come through.
I definitely haven't. Not yet.
He's been consistently bad, which is all you can ask for is consistency. You know what you get from him. All right, we'll kick things off with a women's flyweight bout. Victoria Leonardo will be making her UFC debut against a debuting short notice fighter. That's short notice should set off alarm bells for you, because that's a red flag usually for people to lose fights. This would be Manon Fiorot. I don't even know how to say her name. Do you know how to say her name properly, Dan?
I think Fiorot is
Fiorot?
I think you say it the French way, which I think my Canadian friend here should be able to say better than me. But yeah, she's French, right?
Yeah, she's French. So anyhow, short notice. It's her debut. She's got five. She only got five pro wins, so she's new to the sport, basically, before knockouts. 2 inches taller than Leonardo, and she's a -150 favorite, which I found a little surprising when I was looking at these numbers, not to tip my hand here. As for her, I was going to say Brazilian, but she's Venezuelan, actually, but she's really from New Jersey. So she is coming. She's got only 10 pro fights, but when you look where she's fought, 2 fights in LFA, 5 fights in Invicta, a fight in Bellator, and then a fight in Dana White's Contender Series. So she's had a lot of top level experience. Like I said, it's her debut. She won her way into the big show on Dana White's Contender Series. She's got 5 inches of reach on her taller opponent. She's a plus one. I saw her at 153 was the most favorable number I saw for her on the plus side. What are you thinking on? Do you know much about either of these ladies to begin with?
Yeah, I know quite a bit about. Well, obviously I saw Leonardo on the Contender Series, so I know a little bit of her from that. And I've actually seen Fiorot a few times fight. The thing I like about Fiorot, and probably why she's coming in here as a favorite, is you hear that number, you know, she's only 5-1, she's making her debut, but also I think it's really important to know that she has some really high level experience. She fought in UAE Warriors, which is slowly turning into being one of the better promotions out of that area. She fought in EFC, but also she has a lot of experience that doesn't show up on that professional record. She twice fought on basically the Ultimate Fighter version of EFC, which is an African promotion. She fought twice on that, looked really good in those fights too. That obviously doesn't show up in her pro record. She also has an extensive amateur record. She was a world champion in IMMAF, which is the governing body and the people who are moving forward best with amateur MMA. She was a world champion in that. So she actually has a lot of there's both a lot of film out there on her, and she's got a lot of experience. And the thing I like about her is She uses her kickboxing really well to create distance. She's got great footwork. And for me, when I look back at Leonardo's cage Contender Series bout, the problem with her was she was getting beat on the feet by Chelsea Hackett, which is not necessarily surprising, being that Chelsea Hackett is a Muay Thai fighter and she has that Muay Thai background. But the difference here is that Leonardo changed that fight by shooting takedowns, pushing her against the cage, being the more physical fighter against somebody who has very little grappling experience. Now we have somebody who has that kickboxing advantage over her and the ability to stuff her takedowns and the ability to be the more physical fighter. So I think the fact that Fiorot comes in here as a favorite is not surprising. And I actually am going to take her here too, because I think she's a better kickboxer and she will at least have the physicality to make sure that Leonardo is not able to do what she did to Chelsea Hackett.
All right, well, that's good. We're going to differ on the very first one, because I'm going Leonardo based purely on her. When you look at her resume, it's far better than Figueroa. It's in terms of not just in terms of promotion she fought for, but opponents and opponents' records. And she's also got the she's used to fighting in the UFC cage. She's at least had a contender series fight, and she's got quite a huge reach advantage. So I'm going to go with her for plus money for my first dog of the night. We'll see how that plays out. So. Familiar name, at least familiar last name on her next fight. I don't think this one's officially been added to the card, but it sounds like it's been bouncing around a lot off of different cards. But I believe it's going to happen on Wednesday. That would be a bantamweight bout between Umar Nurmagomedov, who would be Habib's cousin, his actual cousin. He's got a lot of people who are claimed to be his cousin, but this one is actually his cousin, hence the last name, same last name. He's fighting Sergey Morozov. We will start with Morozov first. 16 pro wins, 8 knockouts, 3 submissions, so a very good finisher. He's won 5 straight fights. He was the former M1 bantamweight champion, but he's been out of action since October of 2019, which is a little bit of a concern there. He's a insanely huge plus 415 dog on this matchup on this Wednesday. I was going to say this weekend, but this Wednesday. As for Habib's cousin, Umar is 12-0 as a pro. He fought a couple fights in PFL, so some higher level fights in North America. He's 2-0 in PFL. He'll be the taller man, 2 inches taller, 7 years younger, which is a big thing. He also has been inactive since November of 2019. So he's been on the shelf for a while. He's had his debut pushed back quite a few times, his UFC debut. He's minus 450. He's my pick, but I'm not going anywhere near a number this huge for a debuting guy.
Yeah, and I think if I'm going to bet this fight at all, I actually think there is value at plus 415 here for Sergey Morozov. That's a tough name. Sergey Morozov. Yes. I think there's a lot of value in there too, because I think, and we saw this with Sedner Magomedov too, which you might remember is Habib's pretend cousin, or you know, his third cousin, or whatever relation to Habib. Seems like everybody who comes to the UFC is Habib's eighth cousin or something like that. So you know, like we saw with Sedner Magomedov when he came to the UFC, everybody was like, oh, this is the guy. And like, is he good? Yeah, he's all right. But is he, you know, Habib Jr.? No. And I feel the same way about Umar Nurmagomedov. I think he's getting a lot of that negative number because people see Nurmagomedov. You know, if I was looking at this fight objectively trying to create a line, you know, like I see Morozov as a slight underdog, like maybe plus 150. So for the fact that you're seeing plus 400 numbers there, I would definitely bet the side of Morozov if you were going to bet at all on this fight, which obviously you should bet $100 no matter what on every single fight. So if you're a true hashtag DGEN. So I'm going to say, you know, if we're going with official picks here and I have to choose one of the odds, I'm going to take Morozov in this fight.
All right.
I just think he's going to go out there and sling it enough. And that's kind of fun to watch. I don't think his boxing is as tight as Umar's. But I think Umar might rely a little bit too much on the takedown here, and I'm not sure that he takes down Morozov. So it'll be interesting enough to see if Morozov can be successful on the feet. And at plus 400, I mean, like, I'd see no reason to bet Nurmagomedov anywhere higher than negative 200 in this fight.
Yeah, I agree on that. But he's I got to make a pick, and he's my pick. So it's two wins for me and two losses for Dan. So this card starting off quite well. We'll move things along. We got lots of fights to break down here. Let's go to lightweights. Mike Davis, Mason Jones. Mason Jones is he's debuting, correct? This is his.
He is debuting.
Yep. He is another undefeated fighter, 10-0. He's one of the magical. Mystical Cage Warriors double champ, which is what a lot of the like Mr. Conor McGregor was heading into the UFC. Mason Jones was a lightweight and welterweight champion over for the European promotion Cage Warriors. He is 3 years younger than Davis. He's a plus 170 dog in this one. As for Davis, 8 pro wins, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. So he's never gone to decision. 1-1 in the UFC. He dropped his first and won his last. He was on Dana White's Contender Series previously. He lost his fight there. He'll be the taller man here, 2 inches taller. They have the same reach though. He's been inactive since October of 2019. Also, he's minus 181. And I'm going to cheat and listen to Dan's breakdown before I make an official pick on this fight. I have someone penciled in, but I want to hear what Dan has to say first.
So it's interesting to me because I think Davis is hard to get a read on because the guy's 1-1 in the UFC and he fought maybe the best welterweight in the UFC right now, right? Like Gilbert Burns fighting for a title very well right. Could be Kamaru Usman. And he fought definitely the worst welterweight who's been in the UFC in some time in Thomas Gifford. And I don't mean that disparaging, but like Thomas Gifford's bouts in the UFC were very subpar. And I believe he lost his first fight after leaving the UFC as well. So like and people loved Mike Davis based on that win over Thomas Gifford, who, like I said, one of the worst fighters in the UFC. That fight should have been stopped 8 minutes earlier than it did. And if it stopped 8 minutes earlier than it did, I'm not sure we'd still be talking about Mike Davis being this beast because like he'd have a knockout win, but he wouldn't have just put it on this dude for, you know, 14 minutes before the ref mercilessly came in and let the fight stop. So I think for that reason, I think he's being overrated here. And I actually really like Mason Jones. The kid is super young, super talented. He's been training to be an MMA fighter since he was 7 years old. Like, I actually think that he is probably maybe not the better striker here, but he's going to mix things up enough that's going to make Mike Davis think about the takedown constantly, think about all aspects of the game. And I really think that's all you need to do to beat Mike Davis here, because I do think Mike Davis is a good boxer, but on the feet, he's kind of one note. He's kind of, I'm going to strike you and I'm going to win there. And I think here that the multifaceted game plan of Mason Jones makes him my pick.
Yes, he was going to be my pick also. So we will agree on that.
So the first one we get wrong together.
Yeah. Exactly. We will both go down together in this one. Another familiar name in the next fight, flyweights, Francisco Figueiredo, who is the younger brother of the champion of the flyweights, Davison Figueiredo. He will be making his debut. His debut has been long awaited also. He's fighting Jerome Rivera. Quick breakdown here. Rivera, 10 wins, 7 submissions, so quite a lot of finishes, especially for flyweights. He dropped his UFC debut. He won on Dana White's Contender Series, getting into the big show. He's got 4 inches of height, 3 inches of reach, so he'll definitely be the bigger man here. He's 6 years younger. He also has a big plus 130 beside his name. As for Figueiredo, the younger, he is the younger brother, at least. He's 11 pro wins, 3 knockouts, 7 submissions. So he's another, it's an insane amount of finishes for a lightweight or a lighter weight fighter. His last 5 fights, he's 3-1-1. Like I said, this will be his debut, but he has not fought since September of 2019. He's minus 138. I think I'm going to go with the dog in Rivera in this one. After last week's, all my picks being chalk this, or almost all my picks being chalk this week, I'm going with a lot of dogs. I'm going with Rivera.
And I'm going to join you on that one, too.
All right.
Kind of for the same reason as I picked against Umar Nurmagomedov, I think this line's inflated by the last name. And I think if you look back at Figueiredo's record in the UFC, too, or in his regionals bouts, you know, you said, what is he? He's 3-1-1 in his last 5. And before that, he had a draw, too. So he's 3-1-2. The other really alarming thing about that is those last 5 fights have come over the last 4 years, right? Like that fifth one you're talking about, that win 5 fights ago, came in November of 2016. This guy is not active very much. He fought one time in 2019. He didn't fight in 2020. He fought one time in 2018. And so we're talking about like almost 2.5 years of action here. And in 2.5 years of action, he's 1-0-1. And that loss to Eduardo Souza, I didn't think he looked all that good in it. You can actually find the footage to that on YouTube. And that's a guy he lost to already too, who's, you know, kind of like an older, just stronger version of him. I don't like how Figueiredo looks on the feet. He looks like he doesn't protect his face very much. He relies a lot more on the takedown than his brother does to win fights and to take advantage in fights. And with that being said, you just mentioned, you know, a guy like Rivera, who has quite a few subs on his record, is a tough matchup for a guy who goes in there and needs a lot of takedowns. So, yeah, I like Jerome Rivera in this fight as well. I got him taking out Figueiredo.
Yeah, another quick thing to mention, Figueiredo is already 31, and you got to kind of wonder about guys who don't make the UFC till they're a little bit later in their fighting careers. You kind of wonder what kept them from making it to begin with when they were a younger fighter.
And it's not 31 in the heavyweight division. If he was a 31 right, exactly. debuting fight in the heavyweight division, I'd be talking about him like he was some spring chicken in a yes. hot prospect. But at flyweight, that's not the age where you should be making it. And you also certainly have to question, and I don't mean to disparage Davison Figueiredo, but you also have to wonder, the guy has not fought in a year and a half. He's only fought twice in the last 2.5 years, and he's coming off a draw. Could it possibly be that he was just signed as a favor to his brother, who is doing up pay-per-views for Dana White right now? Like, God, it certainly has to feel that way, right?
Yeah, without question. Yeah, without question. But that's the way the world works. It's who you know, not what you've done. But that's all right. We'll take some plus money. Playing off that, not a problem at all. Move on to some bigger guys, middleweights. Dr. Lugambibula versus Marcus Perez. Perez is, yeah, he's taking this some fairly short notice, is he not?
Because Lugambibula was supposed to fight Carl Roberson, who had to pull out twice due to COVID.
Right. Okay. But I believe he's had more than a month's notice, I think, which is why I haven't marked it down as short notice. I wouldn't even consider short notice if it's weeks rather than the months. But anyhow, Perez, 12 wins, 3 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's only 2-4 in the UFC. He did get his lights put out his last fight, which was the only time he was finished. So hopefully that didn't destroy his chin if you plan on picking him, but you never know how guys or gals will bounce back after the first knockout. 1-3 in his last 4 fights, lost his last 2, so he's on his skid here. He will be the bigger man here, at least height-wise. He's got 5 inches of height. He also is 1 year younger. He's a +115 dog. Lugambibula, 1-1 in the UFC. He also got knocked out his last fight. He's got 3 inches of reach on Perez. You can get him for around -127 is the most favorable number I saw for him. He's going to be my pick heading into this one. Are you going to agree with me here also or not?
Yeah, I like your pick on this one, but I will say I'm cautious on a Lugambibula pick here because I think we broke down his fight with Carl Roberson too. I think before that one was canceled and I said, I don't know how he plans on getting to 185 pounds. I don't know. Yep. I don't know what the thought process is behind that. I think it's probably that he's like a 5'9"? He's like a 5'9" light heavyweight, which doesn't seem like a good idea because he's so short. So I think he's thinking, I'm short, I got to move down. But the dude is massive, right? Like the dude fought at heavyweight in his previous promotion, EFC, in South Africa. So like for him to be a guy who's thinking, oh, I could do 185, I'm worried about his cardio because his cardio wasn't good at 205. So I'm worried about what's going to happen when he sucks down. If he did it the right way, he should be fine. If he's just like, I'm just going to do a more massive weight cut, I'm worried about him anytime after the second round, which if you remember, that's why I picked Carl Roberson when we broke down that fight. But that being said, I think Marcus Perez is a good type of opponent to see what he's got because Marcus Perez, like you said, coming off of getting knocked out, he's overly aggressive sometimes when he's boxing. Like, he's really confident in his striking, and he shouldn't be. So, like, I think that this is probably a fight where Luke Iambula can hit him on the chin early and win, and we don't have to worry so much about his cardio. But that is definitely, if you're thinking about pitching Dulce, that is certainly something that you have to keep in mind.
Definitely. And actually, for the record, it looks like he's, at least according to UFCstats.com, he's 5'8".
That is a short light heavyweight.
Exactly. But he is, but he's got 6 foot reach of a 6 foot four guy. So that helps him out there. But yeah, he is a fire hydrant of a middleweight for sure. Before we move on to a couple guys who aren't fire hydrants, we're going to go back to the flyweight division. Let's tell you about another one of our lovely sponsors who will help keep us on the air here. Better Edge, another newer sponsor for us. That's BETTOR Edge. So Better Edge, if you haven't heard of it, it's a stock exchange for sports bets. It allows you to buy and sell betting positions like you would in the stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house, so they don't steal your money. You can play for money for keepsies in 40 states in the U.S., plus us good people at SGP, we have a weekly contest going with them for all of our listeners. We had the SGP wildcard wager, $10 to enter. I'm not sure. I guess we're past the wildcard phase of the NFL, but I'm sure there's still a contest going on, just with a different name now. So $10 to enter. Each user will start with a balance of $1,000 to wager on multiple events, and the player with the highest earnings will take the entire pool of entry fees. So sign up today at betteredge.com and use promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOR edge.com, promo code SGP. Type SGP in any website you go on and see what you get for free, because more like you're gonna get something for free. All right, so like I said, a couple of the opposite of Dulce, Lugan Miambula. We got some flyweights here, some little guys again. Sumaderji Zaruk Adashev. Like I said, I'm a writer. I don't say these names very often, so forgive me if I butcher them. Muderji, we'll start with Adashev first. So he got 3 wins as a pro, so he is quite new to MMA, but he's got 2 knockouts in those 3 pro fights. Extensive kickboxing record. He's had 19 kickboxing fights, professional ones, so 16 wins, 10 knockouts. So he's definitely going to be a striker here. He's also he's fought 5 pro fights, but 3 of them were in Bellator, excuse me, and 1 of them was in the UFC. So got some high level experience there at least. He lost his UFC debut in a fight which he also missed weight, and he got knocked out by Tyson Nam. So that's not a very good start there to his UFC career. He's might explain why he's plus 350 heading into this fight. Muderji, far more experienced in MMA. Terms, 13 pro wins, 11 knockouts, which is insane, considering this is a flyweight belt once again. Thing to note, all 4 of his losses come via submission, but that shouldn't play much of a factor here fighting a kickboxer, so it's a favorable matchup for him. 2-1 in the UFC, he dropped his debut, but now he's 1-2 straight. He is taking this fight on short notice, so that's a bit of a red flag there. He will be much bigger here also, 3 inches of height, 7 inches of reach, 4 years younger, striking, grappling stats all in his favor. He's minus 370. He's definitely my pick.
Yeah, he's definitely my pick too. And it's worth noting, he's as tall as Dulce Lugiambula.
Yeah, it's true. Good point. He's 60 pounds lighter on weigh-in day.
That's crazy. I would also say too, worth noting, Adashev missed weight at bantamweight for that Tyson Nam fight. He did not miss weight at flyweight. He missed weight at bantamweight, which means he's got to come down another 13.5 pounds here to fight an absolute monster who's been knocking people out. I don't think this fight needs tons of breakdown here. I think Adashev is out of his element. I know he's a kickboxer, but he's going to be the much smaller kickboxer, the much less powerful kickboxer, and he doesn't have very much strength in terms of the weakness of Muderji. So I think this is one of the easier fights on here to pick, and I'm taking Muderji.
Yep, which is good. We've got lots of fights breakdown, so let's move on. A weight class up, bantamweight, Ricky Simon Gaetano Perello. My stats here. Perello will be making his debut. 15 pro wins, 11 knockouts, 3 submissions. So we got another finisher here, which is good to see. He's won 2 straight fights via TKO. He'll be an inch taller than the veteran he'll be facing Simone. He has been on the shelf since October of 2019, plus 306. Simone's 4-2 in the UFC. He also was won his only appearance on Dana White's Contender Series. He won his last fight, minus 316. I'm taking him in this one also.
Yeah, and I think that that negative 316 price tag is a crime. Like, that is an easy play right there for me. To hashtag throw in a parlay if you don't like betting negative 300 numbers all by themselves. But, yeah, I think this is a slam dunk, especially because if you look at Perello and you've seen any of his previous fights, like, he's fighting dudes who, like, are very one-dimensional. And that's sort of what you get out of Europe when you're not in Cage Warriors for a lot of these promotions. You know, he fought for European Beatdown, which is a promotion I had never heard of until I started doing some research on Perello. The last guy he fought was 7-5, and the guy, let's be honest, looked like he only wanted to just Imanari roll and leg lock or fall to his back and do that. He looked like he hadn't striked ever in his life. So I think Simone, being a guy who has a win over Merab Dvalishvili too, I think this is clearly a guy stepping up on short notice and filling a spot, and Simone is just going to run right through him.
Agreed there. And the headliner of the prelim portion, like I said, it starts at 9 a.m. It's actually going to be on the big ESPN. It's going to be on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Headliner is a match who fight we broke down already last week, I guess it would have been, right? Omari Akhmedov, Tom Breeze. So we could go through it quickly. We already broke it down before, but in case you're not one of our awesome listeners to listen every week. Akhmedov, 8-4-1 in the UFC. He's won three of his last four, plus 138 heading into this. Tom Breeze, 12 pro wins, 5 knockouts, 6 submissions, 3 inches of height, 4 years younger, striking stats in his favor, 5-2 in the UFC. He's only been stopped once. He got KO once, and that his only stoppage. He's minus 150. He was my pick originally, and he's still my pick, and Dan had gone against me there. Have you wisened up, or are you still taking Akhmedov here?
I'm still taking Akhmedov here. I think my problem with Brees still continues to be that he looks like a different fighter every single time out. I like his jiu-jitsu, but I don't love it off of his back. So, like, he's not going to take down Akhmedov, and odds are he thinks he's probably walking into a striking match, whereas Akhmedov, the only person he's really had trouble with recently in the UFC is Chris Weidman, who out-wrestled him, and Marvin Vettori, who couldn't quite out-wrestle him. That was a draw. So, like, we're talking about a guy who drew with Marvin Vettori. I think Akhmedov is probably should have been the favorite in this fight, but I think, you know, he probably wrestles up Brees here, and I think he probably does well enough on the feet, too.
Okay, well, that's another fat L for Dan. That's good news for me. Let's do the main card commercial-free, shall we? Let's thank one of our last sponsors. Ace per Head. Ever thought of starting your own sports book but don't know how? That's where Ace per Head comes in. They're here to help you. They'll provide you with an all-inclusive professional betting site with all the lines updated up to the second and wagers graded immediately. They have top-notch customer support going 24/7 and some of the sharpest lines in the industry. Plus, Ace per Head offers live betting and an amazing mobile experience. So get started today. Ace is offering up to 6 weeks free. So go to aceperhead.com/SGP, aceperhead.com/SGP. All right, commercial free now, guys and gals. We start off the main card, featherweights, Lerone Murphy, Douglas Silva, Do Andrade. Do Andrade we'll start with. 26 pro wins, 19 knockouts, 1 submission. He's a finisher, 4-3 in the UFC. He's won 2 of his last 3. He's another guy who's been on the shelf for quite a while, since November 2019. He's plus 245 dog. Murphy, undefeated, 9-0 in 1. One draw, his only blemish as a pro. He's got 6 knockouts. He's a finisher also. UFC is 101. He will be the bigger man here. 2 inches of height, 5 inches of reach, 6 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, minus 269, and I'm in his favor also.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning Murphy on this one too. I am really cautious on that play though, because if you look at those wins for Andrade, even though they're a while ago, like, we're talking about a guy who beat Marlon Vera. Henan Barão doesn't look like a good win anymore, but, like, he beat Marlon Vera. He lost to Rob Font and Peter Yan. Man, like, those are ones where if you look at him, it seems like those are wins that you shouldn't feel too bad about. And yeah, Lerone Murphy went out there and knocked out Ricardo Hamosh. But, like, can Lerone Murphy stop the takedown of Douglas Andrade if he wanted to? Like, Douglas Andrade got Rob Font down 2 times.
Right.
Ah, man, like, I'm going to take Murphy on this one. I don't feel great about it, though, because let me be honest with you. I think Murphy is probably the better striker here, but he also has to keep his feet, which, again, Andrade, and he took down a different Rob Font than we're seeing now that he's back from his knee surgery and looked amazing against Marlon Moraes. But, like, this is a guy who took down Marlon Vera, so, like, could he take down Lerone Murphy? Certainly. But, yeah, I guess I'm going to go Murphy hesitantly.
Yeah, me also. I was leaning on Andrade. Originally, I was flipping back and forth, but I ended up going with Murphy. To note, Murphy's takedown defense is only 40%. But Andrade also doesn't shoot very often. He lands less than takedown per 15, less than takedown per 15-minute fight. 0.65 takedowns, but of note, he has taken down some memorable elite fighters in the division. Flyweights again, which is good. We like watching the little guys fight. We like chunky guys, but we like little guys too. Chunky guy coming up, possibly. Warning coming up. Flyweights, Matt Schnell, Tyson Nam. We will start with Mr. Schnell. 14 pro wins, 2 knockouts, 8 submissions. So another fairly good finisher for flyweight. 4-3 in the UFC. However, he's won 4 of his last 5. He won 4 straight and then lost his last fight. So he went on a hot streak there. Inch taller, 2 inches of reach, so he's slightly bigger. 7 years younger, though, which is a big thing. He also, striking and grappling stats are in his favor. The only red flag here, he also has been out of action since December 2019. He's plus 118. Tyson Nam, 20 pro wins, 12 knockouts, 1 submission, 2-2 in the UFC. He dropped his first 2, but he's won 2 straight, both via TKO. Minus 129. We actually talked about one of his knockouts earlier. Thoughts on this one?
I'm going with Tyson Nam in this one. I love Matt Schnell, but you know, you mentioned him being a finisher. Those recent finishes for Matt Schnell, if you look back to them, they're both by triangle choke. One of them was with him on top first, and the other one was with him, you know, being able to transition to a triangle choke off of his back. And the thing that alarms me about that, and that being his method to victory here, is that, like, that means he has to initiate the wrestling or somebody has to initiate it on him, and that's just not Tyson Nam, right? Like, Tyson Nam, I mean, the guy has said on record that his goal is to knock somebody out or get knocked out because that's what the fans want to see. And that is an insane thing to say, first of all. And second of all, that just tells you the type of matchup he wants here. So, with that being said, I don't know if Matt Schnell is going to be able to get him down. If he is, I don't know if he's going to be able to sub him. And every single round starts on the feet, and Tyson Nam puts people's lights out. So I'm going with Tyson Nam. I actually think he gets a finish here in Schnell.
All right, I'm going to take the plus money in Schnell, but I agree with your breakdown. But I'm liking Schnell regardless. So moving on to one of Dan's favorites, women's flyweight fighter Roxanne Modafferi. She is back in action against Viviana Rujo. Roxy is 4-4 in the UFC. Incredibly, she's swapped wins and losses back and forth. Every one of those fights was a loss and then win, loss and then win. And she's coming off a win. So take note, people who are noticing that pattern. 3 inches of height, 1 inch of reach. The bettors may have noticed the pattern because she's a plus 300 dog in this one. Rujo, 9 pro wins, 3 knockouts, 4 submissions. Won 3 of her 4 UFC fights. 4 years younger. Striking grappling stats in her favor, minus 315. She's my pick. Dan will probably pick her, but he's going to tell you why Roxy has a chance, so I'm sure.
You were wrong. I'm going to take Roxy and Modafferi.
You're going with your heart, not your head here.
I don't know that I am, though, because let's talk about Viviana Rujo. She's a fighter who relies quite a bit on physicality, I think. She's got better boxing than Roxy. I will for sure give you that. But my problem here is that she had a lot of difficulty taking down Montana De La Rosa. And while I love Montana De La Rosa, and I think Montana De La Rosa is a great fighter, Montana De La Rosa gets taken down when somebody tries to take her down. She's got like a 20% takedown defense rate or something like that. She's good at offensive wrestling, but she's not really all that great at defensive wrestling. And for that reason, I worry that Arroyo is maybe not as strong of a wrestler as we thought she was. Like, she had a couple of takedowns against Jessica Ai once, but then got outboxed by Jessica Ai. So, like, I think we mistakenly talked about her as being, like, a good physical fighter after she, like, out-physicality'd Talia Bernardo. And, like, I don't think she's all that impressive in those regards. And, you know, not for anything, and you can say what you want about Roxanne being, like, the most awkward fighter you've ever seen on the planet, but she has made really big leaps and bounds as far as her physical strength and using that physical strength in fights. So I expect her to get outboxed quite a bit, but I actually think she has a pretty good chance of winning this with positional.
All right, Dan's taking another L here. I'm sorry, but that's okay. Hey, if you hit plus 300, it's going to destroy me if you win that one. That's going to win you the week for sure. So
I got a plus 300 and a plus 400. So if both of those hit, I can whip on the rest of the card and still feel
that's
good
right.
myself.
All right, move to light heavyweights. Maybe a hashtag chunky guy.
I would say that these guys fit in hashtag chunky guys.
Not Maria so much, but Isaac Ike Villanueva probably. Maybe not as much now that he's down at light heavyweight. He was at heavyweight before, I believe. Was he not?
He was part of his career.
Yeah. All right. We'll start with Villanueva, who is a journeyman who finally made the big show last summer. 17 wins, 4 knockouts. So he's swinging for the fences. He's dropped both of his UFC fights. He's lost 5 times via submission. Something to note. Minus 135 favorite in this one. Maria, definitely, when you look at pictures of him, he's not chunky, but he's in one of the chunky divisions. So 9 wins, 1 knockout, 8 submissions. So he's never gone the distance. He's 0-3 in the UFC. He won on Dana White's Contender Series to get into the UFC. 3 inches height, 3 inches reach in his favor, 5 years younger, striking grappling stats in his favor. Other than losing all his UFC fights, the only other red flag here is he's not fought since September of 2019. Plus 123. We're going to take another plus money one in this one.
I'm going to take the plus money one on this one too. And not just because I think the line is off, because like I did with Roxy and Morozov, I think those lines are way off. I think he's actually going to win this fight. I think he's a plus money fighter here because he's 0-3 in the UFC. And let's just real quickly run back that 0-3. Alonzo Menafield, Eric Anders, and Paul Craig. Like, he has fought some absolute killers. And if you look at the people who he had fights booked with that got canceled, he was also supposed to fight Roman Dolidze, Tyson Pedro, and Modestus Bukauskas. That is a killer. 3 canceled fights and an even better 3 fights that he's actually had. Plus, add in the fact that he has a win over John Alon, which is what got him into the UFC in the first place. That's a guy who went out and beat Mike Rodriguez and had a split decision with Roman Dolidze. That's a quality opponent that he's actually not only beat, but beat pretty handedly and beat with a choke. You mentioned that Ike Villanueva's got issues with the submission game. We're talking about a guy whose last 7 wins have come by submission, and 8 out of his 9 wins have come by submission. That's a nightmare for Ike Villanueva, and I like Ike Villanueva. I think his striking is probably better than Maria's, but I think that this is a Maria fight all the way.
And I think I smell a upcoming prop bet at the end of the show for this one too, possibly. Moving to the co-main event, a weak co-main event on paper, but it wouldn't have been the co-main event if the original main event hadn't fallen through, if all that makes sense to you. Welterweights, Warley Alves, Munir Laziz. We'll do Alves first. 13 wins, 3 knockouts, 6 submissions, 1-2 in the UFC. Actually, 1-2 in his last 3, I'm sorry. 7-4 in the UFC. He's been around for ages. But he's still 4 years younger than his opponent here. He's been out of action since November of 2019. He's plus 191, I saw him at. Laziz, 10-1 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 1-0 in the UFC, won his debut. He's won 3 straight fights, 2 inches of height, 4 inches of reach, grappling stats in his favor, as is the betting line, minus 210.
Yeah, I'm going to take Laziz here. I think for sure he's the right play in a lot of ways for this fight. One of the things being that he's kind of seen as this, like, kickboxer, right? Like, he's seen as this guy who's going to go out there and slug and do pretty much nothing else. But he also hit four takedowns on Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, who's a judo black belt. So for him to have taken him down as much as he did and outstrike Abdul Razak Al-Hassan for that whole time, you got to feel good about that. Warley Alves, you know, I like Warley Alves. It's worth noting that Warley Alves has a submission win over Colby Covington, which is kind of a fun stat to throw out there. But he's also a guy who got outstruck pretty badly by Brian Barberena. And for that reason, getting outstruck by Brian Barberena, getting knocked out by James Krause, I think Lizzez is a better striker than both of those two guys. With the wrestling mixed in, I think Lizzez is an easy pick here.
Yep, and it is Lizzez. I was saying Lizzez, but yes, I had an E added instead of a Z. So it is Lizzez. Dan said a name correctly. It's just the French names he butchers here. Sorry?
I was going to say, I think I got the one true French name correct, right? Like Marin Renault. Not Renault. Manon
Firot.
Marin Firot. I'm pretty sure I nailed.
Very true. Brings us to our main event, welterweights. Michael Chiesa, Neil Magny, originally scheduled for co-main event, but these guys are game to go five rounds in the main event. They're both game fighters for sure. We'll start with Chiesa. Three straight wins, all at welterweight since his move up. He's been unstoppable. Three straight wins, like I said. As a pro, 17 wins, 11 submissions, so he's looking to tap people out. 10-4 in the UFC. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 118. Magny's won three straight also. He's won five of his last six, so he's on a very nice streak here for the veteran. 17-6 in the UFC, 2 inches of height, 5 inches of reach. He's super gangly, so no surprise he's got 5 inches of reach here. Striking stats in his favor, minus 132. I am going with him in this one, but it should be a fun fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun fight, especially if you're somebody who enjoys the intricacies of scrambling, grappling, wrestling, because I think this might come down to that. The difference for me is just, like, I think I have a tough time imagining a scenario where Michael Chiesa is able to lock up a submission on Neil Magny. And that being his primary way of winning, like you said, he's got a lot of submissions on his record. If you take that away from him, we're talking about a fight where I think both of them are going to have success in the wrestling. I think both of them are going to have some top game time. I think both of them are going to hold the other one against the cage a little bit here and there, which means that I think the deciding factor, if you don't think one has a decided advantage in the wrestling there, is going to come down to striking. And look, Neil Magny can hit you from all the way across the cage because his arms are so long. I don't think Michael Chiesa is nuanced enough in his striking to work to the inside all the time, to have enough success in the wrestling. I actually think he's probably going to shoot less takedowns just because he's having a tough time getting close to Neil Magny and getting close to his legs. Magny pumps that jab like he did against Robbie Lawler, you know, mixed in with the takedowns here. I think Neil Magny probably has the advantage on the feet and does enough wrestling to. I actually think he might have the advantage there as well. So I'm going to go with Magny. Again, a cautious, optimistic pick, because I think this one is very close, as the odds suggest, but I do think he has the advantages there.
Yep, totally agree with that. So we're agreeing on that fight, but yeah, we're also agreeing it should be a fun fight and potential fight of the night. As for props and parlays, I think we probably both like Morea to win via submission over Villanueva.
Absolutely, and I just looked at that to try to find the line and see if you could find Morea winning by submission, and I'm seeing it at plus 225 on some sports books, which means, yeah, that's a huge line. I guess it's not surprising because you're seeing him at plus 120 to win, period.
Yeah, that's true.
Which means, you know, when you break it up over three different odds, I mean, he's a massive – if you think he's going to win by knockout, you can get that at, like, plus 1600. So they're pretty much saying he's either going to win this on with a submission or he's going to win it by decision. Being that it's light heavyweight, you know, I don't see a lot of those fights going the distance. Like you said, Ike has trouble with submission defense. Plus 225, especially if you're thinking of him winning at all, is a nice juicy number there. You basically double your odds by taking him by submission. And then other than that, as far as other guys who I like in a parlay here, I'm pretty sure I mentioned before Ricky Simone should be in a parlay. You know, at negative 300 and some odd, you know, money there, it's still worth playing him. And I'd probably pair him with, and I know I said I cautiously, optimistically took Dolce Lugiambula, but those odds are very close to the center line there. And like I said, I just don't think Marcus Perez has the ability to take Dolce into those deep waters that he needs to in order to be the type of fighter who can exploit the fact that he's moving down to middleweight for the first time in his life. And who knows, maybe he'll look great at middleweight anyway. So when you combine the fact that, like, it's not the right opponent for to take advantage of that, and that Dolce is definitely a better fighter here, I like those two together. And with those two together, you're going to get, like, plus 160 odds. So, that's going to be my official parlay for this one. And like Jeff said here, I definitely think Vinicius Moreira by submission is a slam dunk pick.
There you go. So we hit all of our hashtags. Hashtag throw him in a parlay. We keep some parlays. We had a hashtag chunky guy. I don't think Maria is fair to call him chunky, but Villanueva less chunky but than he was, but we'll say he's chunky still. So hit all our hashtags. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter with the hashtags, and make sure you follow us. I would be Jeff Fox Writer. He would be Gumby Vreeland. You're going to get to hear from us again in a couple of days because we have another fight card to break down, the very big UFC 257. So we'll get out of here and we'll see you in a couple of days. We may even be recording UFC 257 right this second. So you never know. The magic of podcasts. I'm not saying anything, but we may want to get out of here so we can get the other one in the book. So anyhow, thank you for listening. We will speak to you again shortly for UFC 257.